In this interview, I'm sitting down with Southern California-based photographer Ken Lee. This one is all about the art of seeing. This is Twit. Okay, I'm really excited to get into this interview. This one is a little bit different from many of the interviews that I conduct where we're talking about technique and gear and all that stuff. This one is more about psychology and specifically the psychology behind the art of seeing. Ken Lee, Southern California-based photographer, is here to tell us about his perspective when it comes to the art of seeing. Ken Lee, welcome to This Week in Photo.
Thanks, Frederick. Really glad to be here.
So, Ken, before we dive into the art of seeing, let's talk a little bit about you. You're down in Southern California, correct?
Yeah, I'm currently based in L.A. right now. Used to be in Colorado for a number of years, but actually started out in L.A. and kind of have wound up back here. I fell in love with photography right after I got my first camera in high school as a birthday gift, and I went to regular college, photography was not on the career track, but just kept pulling at me, and I eventually ended up dropping out, much to my parents' delight, and ended up at Brooks Institute in Santa Barbara, which I know you're familiar with. So yeah, I went there. Fortunately, they didn't require any type of portfolio or anything like that. They kind of preferred having a blank slate, which is exactly what I was, because I was completely naive to everything about photography. At the time, I didn't know that cameras other than 35 millimeter existed. Yeah. So when they told me to get a 4x5 camera, I said, "What is that?" And then the guy at the store said, "Oh, you mean a 4x5, right?"
That's fantastic.
That was many years ago. And since then, I've done commercial photography for a number of years. I got out of photography for a little while and then got back into it. I opened up a gallery in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, and was selling prints and such there. And then now I'm mostly doing teaching. I'm doing photography workshops and seminars and things like that.
So, Ken, in terms of the art of seeing, how did you get to the point in your sort of visual career where you see a little bit differently than, say, other photographers?
Sure. Just before I get into that, I'll just mention that, I believe that photography is definitely has both craft and creative aspects, and I don't think anybody will argue that. Right. But out there today, and definitely on the craft side, the equipment, particularly in the last, decade or so, has just, taken us to places that we, could have never imagined and given us all these amazing capabilities. And, I'm a gear junkie and love to nerd out on equipment and Photoshop techniques just as much as the next person. Sure. But I think there's just plenty of that out there, right? You just can't, there's no shortage of Photoshop tutorials or equipment reviews. And I think just, the other side, the other half of photography, as I like to call it, has just been kind of given short shrift a little bit. And I think a lot of that is because people kind of feel like, creativity is important, the photographer's eye, all of that, nobody's going to argue that these things aren't important in photography. But I think the attitude is kind of like, okay, well, yeah, it's important, but what are you going to do about it? It's kind of like you have it or you don't, or, maybe at best, it's just something that just comes, slowly, with time. Yeah. And from my own experience, I've learned that that's not true, that creativity is more of a muscle than a talent, and that a photographer's eye is something that you can learn. And for me, I learned it at Brooks. And it was, for me, there was literally an aha moment. There was literally a specific time time where, you know, it just suddenly dawned on me and I got it, and, you know, the skies.
Yeah,
it was. Just to kind of give you the brief rundown, there was a, you know, the Brooks is a very technical school, and they really didn't talk about, you know, the creative aspect at all. You were kind of left to figure this out. But I had one teacher who had a really great reputation there. I was super looking forward to taking his class. But before that, I had already been, you know, two and a half years into a 3-year program, and I, you know, was starting to wonder if I'd made the right choice because, you know, I was doing fine in school and my pictures were, you know, fine technically, but I knew deep inside that, you know, they just weren't inspiring. You know, they weren't nearly as moving or powerful as the images that had gotten me into photography. And, you know, I thought maybe I just don't have the talent, you know, maybe, you know, I love photography, but photography doesn't love me. I was really struggling with this. So I signed up for this class. And the first thing Harry tells us to do is get this book called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. And it's a book about learning how to draw. And you know, me, along with just about everybody else in the class, you know, said, what is this? You know, why are we wasting our time learning how to draw? Where, you know, we're all serious photographers here and, you know, we're paying, you know, not a little bit of money here to go to the school. Yeah. Anyways, he made us get this book, and he knew that if, you know, if he assigned the assignments out of the book, the exercises as homework, then, you know, most of us probably just blow it off or do it at the last minute or, you know, scribble something down in a couple of minutes. And so he made us do these assignments, these exercises in class. So, you know, grudgingly, but I had no choice because he was literally walking around looking over our shoulders, watching him do these drawings. And the first one was this, we had to copy a drawing that was presented or that was printed in the book upside down, and we had to copy it. And 30, 45 minutes, you know, of doing this, and I turned my paper right side up at the end of the exercise, and I was just stunned. I was, you know, it was by far the best drawing I'd ever done in my life.
See, you know, Ken, that's amazing. So just by turning the image upside down, you were able to create the best image you've ever created. What was it about the inversion that made you able to create a good drawing?
Right. That was what I couldn't get out of my mind. Like, why should it make a difference? Right. I'm definitely one of these. I think, you know, by the time you're, you know, 6 or 7 years old, you know, if you have any talent in the drawing area, and you look at the other kids' drawings and you look at yours and you realize, okay, well, that's not my field, you know. So I was definitely at that camp and never considered myself an artist, never thought of myself that way. I couldn't get it out of my mind. Why should it make such a difference if I draw something upside down versus right side up? And so you go on to, you know, read more of this book. It's Betty Edwards is the author. And she goes on to explain, that there are literally two ways of seeing and processing information. And she noticed that as an art teacher, that the people who struggled with drawing, it wasn't so much an issue of talent or skills that had to be taught from drawing skills, you know, shading and, you know, how to hold your pencil and these kind of things. But it had to do with the way that the students were seeing the object or the thing that they were drawing. Yeah. And so, it's not a metaphor or an analogy. It's really more a physiological thing. And so at the time, you know, this whole idea of left brain and right brain, you know, that research was just starting to emerge. So she called the two ways of seeing, called it L mode for left brain mode and R mode for right brain mode. And, you know, her premise is that, you know, the certain tasks, drawing and photography as well, for that matter, are, you know, you need to be in right brain mode, at least at certain portions of that process. Mm-hmm. And what happens is left brain likes to hijack the process. It says, you know, you put your eye to the camera and left brain says, oh, I know what to do here. You know, it's, let's see, you know, we need to set the ISO at, 100 and we're going to, I think I want to go with a shallow depth of field. So I'm going to go F2.8 and I need this kind of shutter speed and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it's going through all these things and it's got this idea of what it wants to create in its head, but you're not actually seeing what's really there in front of you. And, you know, in a nutshell, left brain, you know, sucks at design.
Yeah.
And right brain is the side that doesn't deal with words, that processes images.
Okay, Ken, so if you're saying on the left side, that's obviously we know that's technical, and the right side is creative. Photography is both, right? So when we look at these things that we use every day, they're supercomputers, and they demand that we use both sides of our brain, technical to operate the bells and whistles and the science that is photography. And then the right side is looking through the viewfinder and figuring out what it is that we want to shoot and how do we make that aesthetically pleasing. How do you reconcile that, the merging of the left and right brains when it comes to creating a decent image?
You know, I say that I'd like to take a whole brain approach to photography.
Cool.
meaning that there are craft and creative aspects of photography. And it's a matter, the trick is to use the right tool for the job.
Yeah.
And now, the job, if you say the job is photography, but if you break down the process, if you break down, you know, you have this idea of what you want to create, and then there's things like exposure and depth of field and, you know, equipment choices, lens choices, things like that. You know, that's more or less left brain activity, okay? And you need that. And
yeah,
people that don't learn that, that are highly creative, but they don't learn that aspect of it, you know, they struggle because they can't execute vision, right?
Yeah.
Or when they do, it's an accident and they can't reproduce it, you know? But on the other hand, when it comes to like the moment of composition or even before of like deciding this is a picture, you know, this is a good picture, this will translate well as a photograph, you know, this is expressive, or, the arrangement of these objects works, you know, somehow it just seems to fit, you know. I know another guest of yours, David Duchemin, likes to use the term visual balance. And that's,
yes,
I think that's a great term, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the closest I can get in words to explaining what I'm talking about. But, you know, one question I like to ask people is, have you ever noticed that, you know, we instantly recognize good pictures? Right. And
right. Yeah.
We all knew what a good picture was, you know, way before we learned the first thing about how to make a picture. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something instinctive, you know, and you know, these things are, you know, modified, or, you know, they're, you know, culture and upbringing and personality, all of these things, you know, come into play. But at the heart, at the core of it, I think there is a side of us, and, you know, this right brain side, for lack of a better term, that is kind of a natural designer. You know, it knows what works, or there's a sense, you know, it understands, it speaks the visual language.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other side, you know, of the analytical side of our brain speaks the verbal language, and it uses words, and it uses, you know, words primarily to convey, and logic to, you know, to make it sense out of the world. On the other hand, the other side of our brain, or the other way that we think, uses images and feelings and emotions and ideas as its vocabulary. And so, you know, at that moment when you're deciding, you know, is this a picture, or, you know, this is a picture, and then, you know, specifically when you get to composition, you're trying to decide where exactly in the frame things should go. And is it better over here, or is it a little bit better, you know, this way or that way?
Yeah.
That's when you really need to be using R brain, you know, right brain mode, R mode, as Betty Edwards called it. I call it C mode for creative mode. And just before we get too much further, I want to, you know, throw out there that, you know, the people that do brain research, you know, the neuroscientists and so forth, you know, they cringe at this idea, this kind of popular notion that, you know, what this idea of right brain and left brain has come to mean in our culture. And you know, the idea that there are left brain people and right brain people is just a complete fallacy and it doesn't exist. You know, we all use both sides of our brain all the time.
So, Ken, a lot of people will say that symmetry is the basis of most, if not maybe all, beauty. Is that the bottom line here, that we're looking for patterns that are symmetrical in nature and therefore that makes a good photo?
You know, you're in a field where you're using that muscle, that, yeah, you know, that creative muscle, that, you know, whether you're doing it consciously or not, you know, you're aware of things visually, you know, and you evaluate things, you know, as visual data, sure, and, you know, whether it looks good or pleasing or whatever. And so I think, you know, I think there is such a thing as talent. You know, that's not to say that, you know, talent doesn't exist and that we're all created equal. There is, you know, some people are just naturally able to do these things or naturally good at that. You know, there's lots of people, you know, I'm sure we probably all have friends that, you know, that aren't trained photographers or anything, but, you know, you hand them your iPhone and they'll go walk off and take some pictures and you're like, wow, that's amazing, you know, and, you know, they see things, right? You know, they see things where others don't really see anything. And so, but I think we all have this innate capability, or we have this kind of basic, you know, side of us. It's just, it's not something that we either have or we don't. It's just, it's something that maybe that we either need, yeah, we need to develop or that can be developed. And like, that's why I like to say creativity is more of a muscle than it is a talent. It's, you know, you use it, you practice it, you know, and if you consciously practice it, then it gets better faster. Just like, you know, if you were going to learn to play a sport, you know, say golf, you know, you could go out and just, you know, grab some clubs and a bunch of balls and just start whacking away. Yeah. And eventually you would get a little better. But, you know, if you have somebody to show you, you know, the way, or, you know, the idea of what a good drive is, or, you know, what you're trying to do, then you go out and practice, you know, you're going to make more progress. So, you know, I guess for me, the bottom line is, like, you know, this is something that didn't come naturally to me. You know, this is something that I had to learn, and I had to process, or had to practice. And I've been practicing, you know, for 20 some years now. And, you know, from my own experience, I know that it's something that can be learned, and it's something that gets better with practice. And the more you do it, the easier it becomes, and the more kind of the easier it is to kind of make that switch, or to be aware of, okay, I'm not in the right mode. You know, literally, I'm trying to think this too much, and, you know, left brain, you know, likes it to create its concepts of things, but it's based on, you know, ideas that are not necessarily there in the real world.
Yeah. Well, how do you if we put a fine point on this and we think about the art of seeing, you know, when someone comes upon your brand, artofseeing.com, they get introduced to you, what's your first move in terms of how do you, in your elevator pitch, if you were, about the art of seeing, you got 30 seconds to explain what the art of seeing is to someone. What do you say?
Got it. Well, you know, kind of just a summary of what I've already, you know, we've already talked about, is that the main point, I think, is number one is to learn that this exists, you know, that there are these, you know, two, I think, you know, it's kind of an aha moment. It was for me, is to learn that there are literally two ways to see. Yeah. And once you know that, then the trick is, or the task is, how do I use the right tool at the right time? And then how do I, you know, make that tool better and stronger and more effective, right? So that's what art of seeing is all about. You know, is about teaching people that, you know, this is the way that we're built. This is the way that our brains and our eyes work. Yeah. And then, okay, here are things you can do to consciously develop that muscle. You know, and so, for instance, you know, the reason that, you know, I was able to draw better upside down, or copy a drawing better upside down, is because when it's upside down, you know, I couldn't use these stored concepts I have of what a head is or nose, you know. And so, you know, if that thing was turned right side up, without even thinking about it, I would have automatically drawn an oval for the face and something like a triangle for the nose and something like almonds for the eyes. And because everybody knows that a nose is like a triangle and all faces are oval, but that's not true when it comes to drawing or photography. It's, you know, the slightest, you know, movement of their head, the change of light and shadow, the, you know, for us, lens perspective, where we stand relative to the subject, that changes, you know, the slightest shift in any of these variables changes everything, you know, and everything, you know, some, you know, the eyes are not necessarily the same size depending on, you know, what angle you're looking at them from and if there's perspective involved. So, you know, becoming aware of all of this is very important. And when it was upside down, I couldn't use these stored concepts. And so eventually the left brain just gave up and said, okay, you take over at right brain. And right brain said, hey, no problem. You know, I see this line that kind of curves down like this. And I see another line that, you know, that intersects about two thirds of the way down. And then there's this other shape that's kind of, you know, and it just looked at what was there, and it didn't try to name it. It didn't try to categorize or classify or, you know, put it in its little cubbyhole. It just saw what was there. And so, you know, how do we apply this to photography? You know, that's what we're trying to get to, right? Yep. So, you know, there are many, it comes down to trickery, you know, it comes down to tricking your brain into, you know, in tricking the left brain into kind of giving up and saying, okay, you know, I can't do this. You take over. So, you know, for you know, to get to a concrete example, one thing that I tell people to do, and I don't know how many people actually try this, but so when I'm shooting landscapes, for instance, I typically will compose out of focus. Okay. So
I was going to ask you about that. Thank you for bringing that up. I was going to ask you. I learned that in school to blur your eyes.
Right. You know, well, you know, to go. Yeah. Like, you know, my teachers used to tell me, OK, if you want to imagine what the scene will look like in black and white, then squint your eyes. Right. Mm-hmm. And then it will kind of reduce it just down to contrast and shapes. You know, that has to do with rods and cones and all of that. And but you know, you start to lose detail. OK. And so I like to say, you know, what needs to happen is you need to start seeing the forest and not the trees, you know, when it comes to composition, right? Because, you know, I like to use live view and a tripod for landscape. So I turn on live view, I intentionally throw the lens out of focus, and then I start, you know, moving things around, moving the camera around, you know, maybe zooming in, zooming out, or moving position. And I'm looking there, and I'm not like trying to say, okay, that tree and this thing. I'm just looking at kind of like the overall picture and what feels right.
Yes.
Yeah, these blobs of color and light and shadow, and it's like, okay, somehow this arrangement feels right. You know, this arrangement feels, you know, coherent and balanced, and you know, inevitably that will be your best composition, or that will be a good composition. Same thing when you're editing. You know, like I know people like to immediately, you know, they stick their card in to their computer, download to Lightroom, and I see a lot of people immediately jump into that. You know, they hit the E, right? And you blow, you get the thing, you know, full size, you get the single image, full size, and then they start scrolling. And I tell people, no, don't do that. So look at them as thumbnails, okay? Look at the page of thumbnails and just quick, don't try to even look too carefully at it. Just kind of scan, you know, with your eyes. And the ones that jump out at you at that level, you know, are the ones are you know, most of the time, those are going to be your strongest compositions. Sure. You know, when it comes to, you know, faces and expressions and micro expressions, there are times when, you know, things, they're not going to see those kind of things, you know, at a small size. And, you know, you need to zoom in and, you know, make those calls. But, you know, for the majority of things, whether it works as a picture, you need to trust that first instinct, because as I said, you know, we instantly judge pictures, right? I mean, you know, how fast does it take us to scroll through, you know, our Instagram feed and get caught up, right? And we're looking at these things for a fraction of a second, literally, and we've already decided whether, you know, we're going to pause and take a look, you know, or just nothing, right? And we're built this way, you know, and that side of our brain is the side that's its purpose, is to process visual information. And also, that is how everybody else is going to look at your photo, okay? And because once you start you know, once you let it go past that initial gut reaction, then your other side of your brain jumps in and starts justifying why you took that picture and what you were trying to do and blah, blah, blah. And you don't get to be there to explain your photos to other people. You know, by the time you get the second word out or even before, they're already have made their decision, right? And if they tell you it's good afterwards, you know, they're just being polite, you know,
and I want to get into some practical ways that people can go out today and start using this technique and seeing a little bit differently. But when you, let's flip it on its head, right? So when you're out and about and you're, or not out and about, or you are looking at other people's photography, whether it be a physical print in a gallery or in a magazine or Instagram or Facebook, whatever, do you use these art of seeing techniques when you're looking at other people's work to sort of grok what that work looks like, or is it just, you know, I'm just,
I think it's just something that automatically happens. I think it's just, you can't help it. You know, you look at a picture and, you know, before you've had a chance to even, you know, think a word about it in your head, you've already decided. Right.
Yep.
And we all, you know, if we, you know, kind of analyze the process, we all know that's how it works. Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, you can sit there and, you know, sometimes, you know, you do this in museums. Right. You know, you're like, you're supposed to like this. Right. You're supposed, this is acknowledged as a masterpiece.
You're supposed to like it. Right.
Yeah. It's a masterpiece, but, you know, it doesn't do a thing for me. Right. And so you then left brain jumps in and, you know, starts justifying things and say, oh, you know, it's this lighting and the brush strokes and the choice of color. You know, you try to, but, you know, you're trying to talk yourself into it at that point. You know, there is this side that just immediately processes that image as a whole, and it knows whether it works or it doesn't, you know? And like I said, there are things like culture and you know, upbringing and your own personality, all of these things do come into play. But at some deeper level, there is this, I think we all have this kind of inherent sense of design. And so what's beautiful, what's not beautiful. And, you know, I think there's a lot of commonality about that, you know, in the world. If you show people, you know, a group of random photos that are, say, just, you know, snapshots by people on the street versus, you know, say, you know, more intentionally shot photos by, you know, professionals or by, you know, people that do this a lot.
Yeah.
Those, you know, and you ask them which ones are the good ones, you know, you ask, you know, people, you know, randomly, and the cream will definitely rise to the top. You know, and, you know, it's proven, you know, by Instagram is the best, the best. Absolutely. Pictures get the most.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. So just the idea of what is beautiful and how do we, you know, kind of at a biological level, how do we determine what beautiful is? We talked a little bit about symmetry and how that is one factor that contributes to us perceiving something as beautiful or not beautiful. But if you look at nature, there are certain things in nature that we see that we say, yeah, that's beautiful. And we look at other things that nature produced and say that's ugly. Like a flower, we'll say a flower is beautiful, but we'll look at a spider and say that's ugly, or an earthworm or something like that. We'll say that they're still created by nature and they have symmetry and repeating patterns and all that stuff. But one is pretty and what isn't. You have any ideas on why that is?
Well, I think this idea of trying to put it into words is a little bit of a mistake. Sure. You know, it's like you're trying to use the wrong tool for the, you know, and that is what our logical side wants to do. It wants to name and categorize, and it wants to be able to have very clear set of rules. Like, okay, if it's symmetrical, you know, if we could say that things that are symmetrical are beautiful, you know, things that are, you know, this shade of gray or that shade of, you know, or these color combinations, then, you know, it's very, you know, we've got nice little compartments, right? And we've got nice rules. But that's my point, is that we have that side of our brain, but we also have this other side that doesn't operate by those rules. And, you know, it's the side that sees the forest, you know, rather than the trees, right? And it sees the big picture and it grasps the whole of it. And so, you know, I don't think you know, I think, you know, let the brain scientists figure this out,
right,
you know,
and we shouldn't have to get into that minutia, and
no matter what, I think the language is limiting, you know, they're going to say, okay, yeah, symmetry is one thing. And, you know, that's real easy. And, you know, maybe they'll come up with certain color combinations and they'll say, oh, green is beautiful to us because it represents
life, blue, water. How are you in my head? Because that was the next thing. I literally wrote that down, color combinations and how they apply to beauty. For example, and I don't know if you get into this in your Art of Seeing talk that you do, but, you know, we and I guess this is evolutionary, right? We tend to think of red and those kind of bright colors as dangerous and bad, because mm-hmm. in nature, if you see a red snake or an orange snake, you probably want to stay away from it, right? But green is typically thought of as good. It's foliage. It's you know, it's not going to hurt you for the most part, unless it's poison ivy or something. So how do you talk about that? You know, color combinations in terms of the Art of Seeing.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, you know, these are explanations. These are theories, right? That people have come up with that. They say, okay, well, you know, we have blue sky and green grass, and that represents, you know, good weather and, you know, lots of food, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that has come to mean beautiful to us, right? Yeah. But not everything that we see that's green and blue is beautiful, right? Right. You know, and it's nice. We want, you know, our logical side wants to have these rules and wants to have these explanations, and they want to be able to reverse engineer things and then, you know, be able to apply it to the next scene. Okay. Sure. Oh, okay. I need a bit of green, you know, we'll get a green scarf on this girl, you know, because, you know, that'll make, you know, and we'll dress her, you know, we'll put her in a blue dress. Okay.
Yeah.
And then that'll make it beautiful. Right. But it doesn't work that way. Yeah. That's the problem, you know? And so I think it's just, you know, unfortunately, I think it's the wrong way to try to, like, I like to say you can't reverse engineer art, okay? And, you know, art is the thing that is inherently greater than the sum of its parts. So, you know, music is not just a collection of notes, right? And, you know, you can't go write great literature by counting the nouns and verbs in Shakespeare and then trying to, you know, duplicate that. It doesn't work that way. Yeah. There's something else that comes when these elements, this particular set of elements, this particular image, this particular, you know, combination of colors, light, shadow, size, you know, so it's in the variables are infinite, you know.
But how do you get that though?
Ansel Adams said there are no rules for good photographs,
right?
There are only good photographs,
yeah,
right? And I think what he meant is that you can't try to, you know, create these rules and then apply them. Okay. That's the wrong approach.
Yeah.
The right approach is to learn to use the right tool for the job and know that that tool already knows what is good and bad. Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So get that thinking part out and saying, okay, this should work because, you know, I've got my horizon on the third and I've got this, you know, object, that's in the foreground that's large and it's connecting to the lake in the background, and, you know, whatever, I'm going to use a polarizer to make the clouds stand out, and you know, you're trying to reverse engineer things from you know, rules that you've learned, and it just simply doesn't work. You know, if the rule of thirds works,
if you're reverse engineering and that doesn't work, for example, but in the beginning you were saying that you can, it's a muscle, creativity is a muscle that you can exercise to make it stronger. So how do you reconcile that? And, you know, exercising that creative muscle versus this is not learnable. Help me understand that.
Okay. So the thing that you're learning is not a technique. The thing that you're learning is how to make the left brain shut up is what it comes down to. Right.
Yeah.
And how to be more sensitive and understand and responsive and I guess, yeah, sensitive, I guess is a good word, to that other side of your brain, the other side of your mind that knows design, that, you know, knows this is good. Because, you know, let's face it, like I said, you know, you and everybody else, you know, is going to judge that picture later using that side, right? And they're going to do it in a fraction of a second before you've had a chance to explain it or before anybody's had a chance to analyze whether this meets the rule of thirds or if there's a leading line or if it's got the right, you know, opposite parts of the color wheel in it, you know. Nobody thinks like that, right? Nobody looks at a photo and says, oh yeah, you know, I see that, you know, they put that horizon on the third and they've got this object over here and, you know, these colors and therefore it's good.
Unless you're another photographer in the same genre, right? Another photographer may look at the work and say, you know, they're going to look at it with the critical, oh, well, yeah, I wonder what camera they used and what lens was that to get that shallow depth of field. So they're going to look at it more, a photographer will look at it more technically, but abstracting those nerds out of it, you know, the general population that's looking at your work, you're right. They're gonna look at it objectively and subjectively, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're gonna do okay. So when I had my gallery, I always knew who the photographers were because they were the ones that were standing, you know, 6 inches in front of a 48-inch print, right? And they were staring at these little, you know, things, you know, but. But before they did that, they saw that picture, right? And then they thought, okay, I like this, you know, well, that's amazing, or whatever, right? And then they wanted to know, you know, oh, let's see the resolution, you know, and let's see, if I can see what he photoshopped or whatever, So that's another thing, you know. I mean, that's, you know, I think, you know, like I said, I think craft is definitely, you know, a big part of photography, but it's only half. And then there's the creative aspect. And we have plenty of resources now about the craft side of things, right? I mean, it's just, you know, we're drowning in it, right?
Absolutely. YouTube, every day.
You know? I mean, I can't, you know, I'm bookmarking stuff left and right because I don't have time to, like, watch all these tutorials and I love to geek out on gear, you know, as much as the next guy. And I think, you know, I definitely appreciate what technology has given us. I think these are tools that are real. They really do help. They really do make pictures better, but then there is this other side, you know, that is important as well.
I think it's huge. You hit on something. I think in a lot of ways, this is huge, and we've been kind of high level and, you know, ethereal in discussing it. But I want to make sure that people hammer home, or that you hammer home, that this is important. This pilgrimage that you're on, helping people see differently, is important, especially in this age of deluge of information and oversaturation with YouTube and all these other sources coming at us. This is a refreshing sort of departure back to just thinking about photography versus geeking out on the latest sensor, the latest technique or cinemagraphs or whatever, right?
Right.
So if I go out, just to sort of start wrapping it up, if I go out and I decide, you know what, hey, I got Ken sitting on my shoulder here, and I have my camera, I'm like, okay, I want to approach today's photography a little bit differently. What are your suggestions? Right. What should I do to keep you with me?
That's why I talk about tricks and things like this, because this is the hard part, is that, you know, if you've ever tried, say, meditation or something like that, right? And you say, okay, stop thinking, right? Well, that's a thought right there, right? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and when we think, you know, we tend to think that if we don't have words in our head, that we're not thinking.
Yeah.
But there is another way of thinking that is non-verbal and non-language-based. And so you need to do little things that are, you know, techniques and such that kind of trick your brain into using the right tool for that moment. Sure. And I guess, you know, we've kind of gone over this ground and a bunch of times, but maybe the best way, you know, best resource I can point people towards is on the front page of my website, which is artofseeing.com, there is an ebook you can download, which has, and it's called Shifting into C mode. Okay, so shifting
into C mode. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's right there on the front page, and it's a free download. And so it's got maybe 15 of my little tips and tricks for for
I'm going to your website now to look at it.
for making that it's what you're trying to do is change your mind state.
Yep.
Right. And when you try to do it consciously, it's hard to do. You know. And so you know, I say like the seeing is a practice in the way that meditation is a practice, but it's also a journey. In that it's not something that you get to and you say, okay, I've done that now. It's just, you know, it's something that you're going to continue to work on and develop and, you know, fine tune, you know, for the rest of your career, for the rest of your life, as long as you're taking photographs. And, you know, it gets easier in the sense that you learn to recognize, oh, this is my other brain here talking and I need to get that thing to shut up and I need to look at the image. You know, you can do things like, you know, look at all the corners and edges, you know, and of your frame, right? Pay attention. You know, you can squint your eyes. You can throw the image out of focus. You know, I told you we had to buy a 4x5 camera when we got to Brooks, and you know, I first of all, I thought these things were antiques, but you know, but when I went under the hood for the first time, I was just like, what is going on here? Everything is upside down, you know, and everything is backwards. And it drove me crazy. And I was sitting there under the hood trying to turn my head and, you know, and I was fighting it. And you know, my teachers would tell me, no, it's actually better for your composition if the thing is upside down, because now you're looking at shapes and lights and shadows. And isn't that what composition is, right? It's the arrangement of shapes and lights and shadows and colors. And, you know, that's all that composition is, right? And so seeing all the detail of what these things actually are, that's his nose, that's a microphone, that's, you know, that's whatever, actually gets in the way, you know, and not so, you know, you want to see when you're doing composition, when you're, you know, you want to see less detail and not more, you know, it's like, you know, we're always into this idea that we want to zoom in. And, you know, that's great if you want to get fine focus, and that's part of the craft side of it. And I use that all the time too. You know, I zoom in 10x on my live view and I fine focus, but before I do that, you know, I figure out, you know, what's the photo, or is this a photo, or is this a good photo? You know, what's the best composition? And for that, I use a different tool, you know, this tool, and I trust, it's learning to kind of trust that side of you and access and trust that, you know, creative mode or right brain mode. That's really all it comes down to. So, you know, it's stuff that you already know inside, because, you know, if somebody else were to show you that photo that you're just about to take, if somebody else took that and showed it to you, you wouldn't have a problem making a judgment whether it's a good photo or not. In fact, you do it automatically in a fraction of a second, right?
Right.
Why can't you do it when you're in the field at the moment? You know, why is it different?
Yeah.
You know, but it is different, right?
Yeah,
and what it is it's the mindset. It's what part of our brain that we're using at the moment. And if you composed it all and got it ready, and then somebody went and snapped it, okay, and then, you know, 2 days later they showed you this photo, before you even had time to recognize it as the one that you had set up, you would have already judged that photo, right? You would have already grasped the gestalt of it and made a decision whether it's interesting or not.
Yeah.
And that's how everybody looks at photos. And so to understand that, and then to kind of, you know, work that process and learn to get, you know, make that mind shift and trust that side of us, and, you know, and you do it over and over. And it's, like I said, it's like meditating. The more that you do it, the easier that it gets, right? In the beginning, you can't go 2 seconds without, you know, a thought popping in your head. But with a little practice, you know, you're able to do it.
I need to practice that. That's a whole nother show that we'll get into a whole other interview. Well, let's talk about what's next for Ken Lee. So, like I mentioned at the beginning, that your website. I've had your lower third up, so people can know where your website is. But you are doing talks. You know, you do talks from time to time around the country. What else is going on? What's under the art of seeing brand?
Yeah, so you know, I go around giving this talk called "Seeing 101" to, you know, photography groups and clubs and organizations and such. I also do photo workshops and tours. That's kind of that's the business aspect of it. I still sell prints and occasionally stock photography and things like that. But these days, what I mostly do is I say I like to take people to amazing locations and practice the art of seeing. So and when I'm there, inevitably a lot of the questions have to do with, well, what lens should I use? F-stop should I, and how about, back button autofocus and, and I'm happy to cover all of that. I'm like I said, I've got a geek mind at heart, so
that's why we get along so well, man.
Yeah. I get all that side of things, and it's important, but I also, try to tell people, or teach people and work with them on looking at the image and, deciding, before you spend all this time with the settings and stuff, is it an image that's worth doing, putting, some investment into, right? Yeah. That's the big thing, because I have a slide in my presentation and it's a golden turd. and I say, so you can polish a turd, but what you get is a shiny turd, right? And so all of the Photoshop and HDR and everything else that you can, filters and everything else that you throw at something, if it's not an image to begin with, that's what are you polishing?
Yeah, that's no, I love it. That's great. So you are at not the Art of Seeing. It is artofseeing.com, correct?
That's right. Yeah, artofseeing.com.
Okay. And all of the places that you're going to be speaking and all that stuff are all listed on the site, I'm assuming?
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's there is a tab or menu for speaking, and it's got a speaking schedule. If you're part of a group and you'd like to have me talk at for your group, I'd love to come out. Hopefully we can make that happen. And then I've got a number of tours, both domestically and abroad. I've got one coming up in Canada that maybe I could pitch as a Spirit Bears. So these are white bears that are neither polar bears nor albinos, and they're only found in the rainforest of British Columbia in a very small area. Yeah. So we're going out there in September, and that's an awesome wildlife expedition.
That's so cool, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on. artofseeing.com. Go grab that ebook. It's right there on the front page. I'm looking at it right now. So they can sign up, download that, and get a better idea of beyond this interview of what the Art of Seeing is. And then if people want to hire you to do a talk at their meetup or event or otherwise, mm-hmm. they can connect to you at the top of the website, right? There's a way for them to
there's contact forms and all that. I'm easy to find, and everything is under artofseeing.com.
Awesome. Kim Lee, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
It's been fun. Thanks a lot.
Okay. All right. See you soon. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
This is Twit.